We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios.
Visit
mte.com.
Middle Tennessee Electric.
Serving to make life better.
Since 1936.
This is WGNS Action Line. Action Line. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers.
Since 1947.
This is WGNS Action Line. Now your host, Scott Walker.
Today with us in studio, we have guests from the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office. We've got Captain J.D. Davis and Lieutenant Michael Rogers with us to talk about a number of issues. And I guess, first of all, how are you guys doing and what's been going on over all the holidays? It's been one holiday after another.
Doing very well. Thank you for having us on. It has been kind of difficult this last few weeks. It's a lot going on from the training perspective, trying to wrap up the year end and get everything submitted to the state that shows that we're in compliance with everything we're supposed to do, and also planning for 2026 and getting all that scheduled and all the, it's a lot of moving parts. So we've been pretty busy this time of year.
Is it tough during the holidays as far as scheduling goes? Because you've got Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, you've got Martin Luther King Day. I mean, there's a lot, one thing after another.
So yes and no. The challenge comes that, you know, people are trying to take holidays and do the family and do all those things. However, I think we do a good job of planning that out ahead of time. So we kind of plan out our calendar for the annual year, and we try to have all those things wrapped up as much as possible by like late October. So really we're just kind of, you know, crossing the T's and dotting the I's that time of year. So when people are trying to take vacations, and we're good, you know, we're pretty set for that.
Does the Sheriff's Department, do they have enough employees to handle things like holidays and extra shifts and all of that? Because I know there are extra shifts that do come up during the holidays.
Yeah, so generally speaking, and just to kind of clarify a couple of different moving parts. So when I talk about our guys in the training division, there's, you know, eight of us or so. And our schedule is not intensive as kind of like the guys on the street. So they're coming from a different perspective. As far as covering the street, answering calls and kind of, you know, that sort of thing, I think we're doing the best we can with what we got. It's a little tight right now as far as shift staffing and getting people in the slots on the street, just like anybody else in any other industry, you know, staffing shortages and that kind of thing. But I think our guys do an excellent job. You know, like you said, those mandatory, well, I wouldn't say mandatory, over the voluntary overtime shifts, we have guys come in, they want to do that, and I think we do a good job of getting that covered.
And there are positions that are open at the sheriff's office, but what different types of positions are open right now?
We are down patrol as well as in our corrections. The jail staffing is doing okay right now, but for our numbers for patrol, and patrol encompasses CID, narcotics, SROs, courthouse. So when we talk about numbers overall, we have several open positions at the Sheriff's Department. And I think right now our career field is just taxed with getting people to come and stay. Longevity is what we try to look for. You know, we get people to hire in and then they leave for whatever reason. And it's not just law enforcement going to different agencies. They completely get out of law enforcement. So right now it's really hard for us. It's taxing on us to get people to get into our career field and stay.
And when you look at divisions like criminal investigations, is that a category where somebody who's never been in law enforcement before could move into? Or for that, are you looking for people who maybe were with other departments or who graduated with a criminal justice degree from MTSU as an example? Or is that somebody for sure who needs to be more seasoned, who has been in law enforcement, and then they come to you?
So, and this is just my opinion. It's kind of a bittersweet thing from a leadership perspective and from a, like a personal growth perspective type thing. So traditionally, criminal investigation, so you're talking about detectives. So traditionally what happened is, you know, guys would get hired, they would be in patrol for a while, several years, they would apply for those positions, they would interview, they'd be selected. And I really think that there's a lot of merit to that position because, you know, frankly, guys that want to become police officers, they want to serve, they want to grow, they want to develop. And that's kind of, for several of them, that's the next step. So you really want to be supportive of that career growth for them. And I don't know that we've ever hired anybody straight into a detective position.
I mean, it seems like that would be tough.
Well, yes. It would be. I think there are agencies, maybe larger agencies, and we have had, you know, kind of thinking outside the box conversations about what do we do? Because, you know, we're trying to fill these positions. I know recently we have actually hired outside for a criminal warrants position, which we've never done before. We're hiring straight into SRO. We're hiring straight into courthouse, where traditionally you kind of go through patrol and that path. But the reality is, because we are so good about developing people, I like to think, they do go on to, you know, state jobs. They go to TBI, they go to Highway Patrol, they go to FBI, Homeland Security. You know, I think we do such a great job developing people, and that we encourage our people to grow, that unfortunately what it creates is openings on the backside. So we have to be creative about how to fill some of those slots. Detectives is specifically very challenging. We are hiring. I think we now have one or maybe two, and I'm going to term this incorrectly, but they're forensic type. They assist CID with like crime scene, and those are civilian positions, if you will. They're not certified officers, but we have at least one, and she's a, I'm going to get it wrong, she has some sort of degree in forensics, and I think it was at MTSU maybe.
Yes.
So we're trying to do outside the box, how do we solve these problems but still support our guys and their growth and, you know, their futures, if that makes sense.
I think the way people look at careers today, I mean, it's changed a lot over the years. I mean, when I look at my parents and even our age group, when I look at our age group, a lot of us started a career with the intent and the goal to stay with that company or that organization and then to slowly move up the ranks over the years to come. But today, people don't look at careers that way. They almost look at different jobs as stepping stones to other companies, to other organizations. So that's got to play into your hiring today at the Sheriff's Department as well.
What do you think? We've had those conversations, and I haven't come to I can't put my finger on what it is. You know what I mean? Like, you could say, if you're talking about challenges in hiring in law enforcement and why do we have open positions, you could say law enforcement in general is a challenging field. Generationally, people look at jobs and careers different. You could say a lot of things, and which one is it? That's probably just a combination of all those things.
And then once you're in that field, I'm sure some people are just made for it.
Sure.
And then you have others who think they're made for it. And then once they start, you know, 2-3 years into it, they've seen enough real life situations that it either burns them out or it just makes them want to do something else out of hurt, out of sadness from seeing what they've seen. It changes people. So how do you find that right personality? And do you do personality type test or of some kind whenever you do bring somebody new on?
So as far as personality testing, I think the only thing that that would cover that is they do have a psychological type, you know, personality assessment that and it's not something we do. It's something that we contract that people who are qualified to do those things do.
hey, Mike, let's ask this question.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm certainly not qualified to to make that
answer that.
yeah, for sure. But the interview. So as far as a person who wants to be hired as a patrol deputy, there's a few steps in that. And we do an obstacle course. We do an interview board, and we sort of ask some of those type questions. But no, there's no like official. We try to answer those questions that you're getting at, those personality types things. Would you be a good fit? We try to answer those in an interview board.
Yeah.
And we ask them a lot of the questions are what would you do type situations. And we try to get to, you know, are you a good decision maker? You know, do you have good ethics, moral values? We try to ask questions like, we try to put you in some of those. For example, if you pull over someone, then you realize that they are a police officer. Mm-hmm. How do you handle that situation? Right. Yeah. And you just try to get to some of the morals and values and decision making and the best you can in an interview board type scenario that lasts, you know, 20 or 30 minutes. I mean,
this would be tough. Hey, and I've noticed most agencies that are first responder type agencies, their interview sessions are before a committee, before a board. I mean, it's before more than one person, which has got to make it tough to begin with on that person coming in for that job interview.
One of the cool things I think that we've started doing here just in the past few years is we've been putting deputies and field training officers on those boards. So the guys that are actually going to be working with them on the street get a say-so in who we hire.
That makes sense.
In years past, it's been, you know, lieutenants, captains, folks that the leadership. And there's been a change, and I really think it's cool that those guys can actually have
a voice.
Yeah, yeah.
And when somebody does, you know, you hire somebody, you think this is going to be a great fit, you know, and they're with you for 2 or 3 years.
Sure.
When they, if they decide, hey, I'm going to leave for this other agency, are they leaving for other law enforcement departments, or are they leaving for other reasons, maybe to go to a totally different field that's somehow related to law enforcement in some way?
They don't always leave for other departments. I know there's a lot of stigma about pay and things of that nature, and they leave for different departments for different reasons other than just pay. I would say at least half of the guys that are leaving law enforcement, they get hired in, they're not equipped, I don't know if that's the right word or not, to handle the situations that this taxing career puts on us as individuals, and they just decide to get out of it, and then they go back to the public sector and work at a different job. So it's not always leaving, not just say our department, but other departments, and going to another department. They just don't want to do the job anymore, and they get out and go back to the private sector and work.
I can imagine that. I mean, because everything from, gosh, fatal accidents to crime scenes, I mean, there is a lot to take in each day at work, and I would guess every day is a totally different day and situation. I mean, from domestic violence to, you know, a suicide. I mean, it's got to be tough.
It is. And law enforcement, I think to a lot of us, is a calling. It's not so much a, you know, you sign up and you look at it and you think, oh, that'd be a cool job. I think it's a calling. And, you know, when I think about it, and I'm sure I speak for others, it's something that when you think about what you experience, you think, how could I ever do this? But in my heart, I'm pulled towards it, you know, and I think that it takes a very special person to be able to kind of filter those, you know, emotions and those things that we experience. But I really think it's a God thing. I think that He built certain people that can do those things because someone has to. Somebody in society has to face those challenges. Someone has to deal with those crashes. Someone has to deal with those family notifications. And I just think that people are called to do it. They're just built to do that. But like you said, some people, they get into it and they do it for a little while and it's not for them. And we wholeheartedly support that. We don't want people doing the job that they don't want to do.
And I would guess most people who go into law enforcement, there's a driving factor there. They want to do it. Yep. They're like you said, built for it. Yep. Maybe something happened in their life that led them towards that
sure,
side of
there
things.
Could be, yeah.
But they don't go into it for the money. But once they're hired, if you're hiring someone fairly young, they then have a family, and then money does come into the equation. Sure. They need more pay.
Absolutely. And that is a struggle for me. So my story is when I was a teenager, I was robbed at an ATM at gunpoint. And after,
was that here locally?
Well, so I was raised in Mississippi. It was in the early 90s. And I'll never forget that the officer that showed up was very like accusatory, like, what are you doing out that time of night anyway?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. I don't think they really believed me until they watched the video. So for me, it was twofold. Like, I never wanted anybody to feel that fear that I had. It felt like a calling for me to stand in the middle between that danger. And the other thing was, I always wanted to rebuild that police community relation, because it was just devastating to me, that encounter that I had, right? So for me, when I signed up for this job, I would do it for free. I couldn't believe they were paying me. It was only $12 an hour, but I couldn't believe I was getting it. Like, yeah. I thought it was the greatest thing ever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you do make a very, very good point in that only takes you so far, because then you also have to raise a family. And so guys have to make those kind of tough decisions.
It's interesting you say that. I was robbed at gunpoint when I was, 18,
okay.
Or either 19, right. But it was in Memphis.
Okay.
I was in
right.
college at Memphis State, at the now University of Memphis, but I was robbed at gunpoint.
It's not a fun thing.
It's not fun, but it's interesting because when the police got there, and we're talking Memphis police here, it felt like what you're saying, accusatory, like, did this really happen? You know, and mine was in broad daylight, but that incident for me changed my, I guess, outlook on crime and how I looked at it, but it also changed my thoughts, at least at the time, on Memphis police.
Sure.
Because it didn't feel right, you know. It made me angry.
Yes, and I hate that. You know, there are good ones and there are bad, just like any other profession. You know, there are really good guys that we work with, or guys and gals, and there are some that are not.
The community can tell right off the bat when they're, let's say, pulled over or an officer comes to, you know, their call. You can tell the ones who are burned out, been on the job too long. I mean, they don't even want to be there, and it shows.
I hope not.
Yeah, but the thing is we're professionals, and when we show up to a scene, that is that person's more than likely worst day.
Yeah.
And so they're looking for a professional to make them feel at ease. And that is our job, to show up, handle a situation, calm it down if we can, and control it. And that's what people look for. They look for that professionalism in people to show up and say, hey, this is my worst day. I need help.
The other thing about what you just said is, how does an officer, how do they go from one call that may be horrible and it's that person's worst day to another call that is somebody else's worst day, but yet that deputy is having his worst day because of something that happened at home that morning? I mean, they literally have to turn off their emotions and feelings for, you know, an hour here, turn it back on for 30 minutes. I mean, it's got to be trying on somebody.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, that therein lies the challenge. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have a good answer for you, unfortunately.
I mean, I don't know who would. I mean, because it's almost like you're jumping from one emotional roller coaster for somebody to the next. The person who's on the scene who just had the car accident or who just went through whatever they went through, they don't understand, and they're not thinking about, of course, what that deputy just saw an hour before. They wouldn't. Sure. There's no reason to.
But it's also not on them. That's what we sign up to do. You know, and go ahead.
And I think as leaders and managers and supervisors, this is a different generation.
It is.
And we have to be able to show up on the scene and notice that one of our officers or our deputies is, for lack of a better term, traumatized by what they just seen or what they went through. And so we as supervisors need to notice that, pull them to the side, and help them with that. And we hope that as an agency, we're giving those tools not only to our supervision but to our deputies to be able to handle those situations. Now, I knew when I started in law enforcement almost 30 years ago, it was just show up, do your job, don't say anything. And we just can't be that way anymore. So we try to give those guys the tools that are necessary and the ability to say, hey, look, I'm not okay with this. I need to talk to someone. So I hope that we're doing a better job at that, and we're looking out for people's mental health in that, so when they go home, they don't take that all that emotions with them.
When you look back over history, when those who fought during World War II, they came back with all of this, these horrible images in their mind, but there was no help for them when they got back. When people came back from Vietnam, there was a little more help, but not what was needed, of course. And then today's military issues, if there is a strike, if there is, you know, some type of situation where they're engaging in gunfire in another country, when they come back, there is a lot more help available, because I think psychologists, psychiatrists, everyone now realizes the detrimental impacts of these scenes that can stick with somebody and change somebody for life. And law enforcement sees that as well. So that's something else that is on the table that you have to deal with as supervisors and figure out and navigate. And that's got to play a big role when bringing somebody new on. I mean, I don't know if you have to explain to them, you know, sure, this is going to be tough.
And kind of wrapping it back into, you know, the training division, a lot of what we do now kind of revolves around mental health, what we call crisis intervention. We have a class going on actually as we speak right now that there's some deputies in across town, and it's a crisis intervention training. And it talks a lot about crisis and people in crisis and what they might be experiencing and how to relate and de-escalate and kind of manage those type incidents. And I think that, I personally think that training those guys on that from like the public perspective kind of gives them permission to talk about their own mental health stuff. And there is a block in that training that how officer mental wellness and some kind of techniques. But I think just having those conversations and giving people permission to say, like, this thing's going on, or I feel this way or that way, you know, I don't see that as weakness. I think that's a great conversation to have. So we do try to throw training in the mix. They do get it in their basic orientation training. They get a little bit of mental health. They do get it at the police academy. These are conversations that we're having. I don't know that we're doing enough. I think that there's plenty of other things that we could do. But I'm just happy that we, like the captain said, you know, once upon a time, you know, that was like a, you don't talk about that stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like you just stick it in a drawer.
You do the business and that's it. So I think we're making progress.
So the bottom line, you're hiring, you need more deputies, you need more manpower, more detectives. Yeah. I mean, every category, there's a checkbox that I guess has to be checked.
Well, it's got to be in proportion to Rutherford County.
Yeah.
You know, and we are growing exponentially, and depending on who you ask, we're the fourth biggest or the fifth biggest. And I don't know which statistic you jump at there, but we got to be top five, you know. So our law enforcement manpower, we have to reflect that. We got to keep up.
And we're building schools, and we have to add SROs to those schools, so those numbers constantly grow. So there's a lot that comes with the department that, you know, hiring people where they go to.
And, of course, there's already talks right now suggesting that the sheriff's department has to have a new jail within 5 years, and that tells us, you know, that problem of the jail overcrowding, that's a continuous problem. And as we continue to grow, it's going to be a bigger problem. And different studies, one from UT, talks about how within the next 25 years, we're going to be, as a county, up to around 500,000 to 600,000 residents.
It's
mind-boggling.
It's constant growth.
Yeah. And so to keep up with that constant growth, to hire new deputies, to hire new detectives, and so forth, how do you go about finding those candidates? I mean, what do you do to say, hey, we're hiring, we need more good people, and how do you go about doing that to let people know? And then what do they go through once they are hired?
So the first part of your question, what do we do? So we have a full-time sergeant, and he's the recruiting sergeant, and that's his job. He recruits. So I think what that includes is like going to the job fairs, going to the colleges. I know that they go to the base in Clarksville. I don't remember, but they go to the military installations, and they do everything they can to kind of bring awareness that we exist and what the pros are to working for the sheriff's office. You know, I think that we have a lot of pros. We have a lot of land mass, you know, so you can travel around and you don't see the same thing every day. You know, we've got so many different divisions with the SRO and courthouse and warrants and patrol and detectives and all those things. It gives you a little bit more. So he talks about all the pros and kind of gets those people in the door. And then the second part of your question, what do they go through? So once they kind of get in the door, so to speak, there's a pool. They have to run an obstacle course first thing, and there's a standard that they have to meet. You know, they're jumping over walls and going through culverts.
So basic physical fitness stuff.
Yeah. So it emulates what they do at the police academy. So our philosophy is if they can pass ours, then we send them to the police academy. They can pass that. That's kind of where that comes from.
And it's at that point when you send them to that police academy, you're investing in them.
Yes, absolutely. There is one benefit right now. The governor put some grants in place so that new officers who go to the police academy, we don't have to pay for that tuition. And there's a couple of things that the governor put in place to kind of incentivize people to get into law enforcement. Mm-hmm. I probably won't get this number right, but I think it's a $10,000 bonus for folks to sign on. It's either $8,000 or $10,000 to sign into law enforcement. The academy tuition is covered by the state, and then also the agencies are getting some money back to pay for like their, you know, their uniforms. And so the governor's trying to incentivize people getting into law enforcement. Beyond that, though, if you think about the number, so it's roughly 9 months ish that it takes to go from a brand new person to a solo officer. We're paying their salary during that whole time, right? You're paying instructors their whole salary during that time. You're paying for their gear. So we provide everything that you would need to be a deputy. You just have to show up. We'll give you everything you need. So your gear and your duty belts and your weapons and your cars and your radios. I mean, the radios themselves are several thousand dollars, right? There's a huge chunk of money that goes into those deputies. And unfortunately, if they change their mind, they either don't pass or they change their mind, some of that money can't be recouped. Right. So some of the equipment can be recycled. Some of it cannot. The salary and all those things certainly cannot. So, yes, there is a big investment. And I don't know what that number is, but I think per deputy, it's several 50, 60, 70,000. It's a lot of money, especially when you start talking about cars.
Yeah.
And the equipment that goes into the cars and the computers and it's a lot.
We got to take a break.
Yes, sir.
But when we come back, I'm curious, out of those that you do hire and send to the police academy, how many don't make it through that academy? And we'll talk about that when we come back, but I am curious. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be right back to talk more about the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office.
Looking for great deals on name brand clothing, furniture, and more? Visit the Garden Patch Thrift Shop on Spring Street across from the tall downtown NHC building in Murfreesboro. Our competitive prices and quality selection make it easy to find exactly what you need. And here's the best part, 100% of your purchase supports Greenhouse Ministries, helping over 70 families a day. When you shop at the Garden Patch, you're not just getting a deal, you're making a difference. The Garden Patch Thrift Shop on Spring Street in Murfreesboro.
WGNS is powered by Middle Tennessee Electric. Use caulk or weather stripping to seal leaks around your windows. Stopping drafts is one of the quickest ways to lower your winter bill. Get more ideas at mte.com/myenergyplan.
This message brought to you by the Central Tennessee Regional Solid Waste Planning Board. Visit RecycleRightTN.com for tips, ideas, and locations on where to recycle near you. That's RecycleRightTN.com.
Recycle right, it's all on you. Don't be trashy, recycle classy, recycle right, Tennessee.
Go to RecycleRightTN.com.
Recycle right, Tennessee.
This is Bud Rakes, former principal of Smyrna High School. I'm a resident of Adams Place, and I recommend that you come and visit us here at Adams Place. It's a great place to be. I enjoy it here and spending my time. I just don't think you could beat it for a place to spend time and be thankful that the Lord's allowed me to be here that long. And, of course, I would encourage anyone, if they're looking for a place, to look at Adams Place, because they'll have a hard time beating it.
The Recycled Minute with our own Rocky the Raccoon. He's in Murfreesboro today, teaching us all to recycle right, Tennessee style.
I love coming up with new ideas to share with my friends.
Here's Rocky.
You know how kids are always getting hurt, and us adults too, I know that. Yeah, okay, anyway, after you recycle the majority of bottles at the end of the month, you know, the plastic ones that you use to hold water with, or the bottles that sodas come in, set a few aside, fill them up with water, and then put them in the freezer. That way you always have a reusable ice pack on hand if you ever get hurt. Maybe you fall, bruise your leg up or something. Not to worry, because you got a fresh ice pack in the fridge just waiting for that injury. I'll be thinking of some more ideas to share with you next time. For RecycleRightTN.com, I'm Rocky the Raccoon.
And that's today's Recycled Minute with Rocky the Raccoon. Find the closest place to recycle by going to RecycleRightTN.com.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
With us this morning from the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office, we've got Captain J.D. Davis and also Lieutenant Michael Rogers. And one of the things we've been talking about is hiring and finding the right and enough personnel. But before the break, I was asking, once you hire somebody, you send them to the police academy, do you have a percentage who don't make it through police academy? Because I'm thinking about back at like boot camp. And
sure.
And I remember you start with X amount of people, yep. And next thing you know, this guy over here is crazy, and you know, you lose at least five or six per unit, or however you want to word it. Is that true also for police academy?
Well, I would say yes. Informally, I would say yes. And the reason for that, so the police academy, though, you have to kind of keep in perspective, it's from agencies all over the state. So they say, and I don't have statistics on this because that would be, you'd have to ask Post about that, but there's generally 130, 140 or so recruits that show up. And by the time they graduate, it's 100-ish, you know?
Yeah.
So they definitely lose people. We lose people specifically in the academy on occasion. But if you look at our entire, what I would say,
training process,
right? Yeah. So if you look at it from the day that we offer them a job to the day they can get in a car by themselves and do the work, it's generally 9 months-ish. And if you look at that process, we have kind of an informal 30% rule. So from the time that we hire or offer a job to the time they can do it on themselves, we generally lose 30% of folks. And it's either they just change their mind, you know, through the training process, they just decide it's not for them. They get hurt. Maybe they can't pass the police academy, like you mentioned. Maybe they can't pass our field training standards. There's all kind of different things that happen. But generally speaking, we lose about 30%, I'd say, during that time.
Has it always been that way, or is it just today's society? You got a lot of people who don't know how to stick something out. They don't know how to stay with something and complete it.
So I've been in my previous roles, I was the field training coordinator as a sergeant several years ago. It's kind of hard to answer that question. So the specific answer to that question is no, we didn't always lose people at that rate. However, we didn't always hire people at that rate either. So when I was the field training coordinator, call it 8 to 10 years ago, I might train 15 to 20 deputies per year. We now have a class size of 15 to 20, and we do that 4 times a year. So whereas we used to hire maybe 15 people per year, we now hire, you know, between 60 and 80 per year. So maybe the percentage was the same, but it was only like one person, whereas now it's, you know, 10 to 15 people. So does that make sense?
It does.
It's volume.
We hired 42 last year.
So
this demonstrates how fast our county is growing, because, you know, 10 years ago, we may have had a population, and I'm just throwing this out there, like 260 or so. And now we're almost at 400,000 residents. Yeah. So it is, for anybody new to the area, it's surprising. They probably don't realize it if they're new to the area, but it's surprising how fast we have grown as a county.
Well, you can just drive around and see that.
Yeah. Every single corner, there's a new business, new house. And that's got to play into the role of making it even harder to find good personnel and keep them, because of the fact that there's so many job opportunities available today.
Sure. Well, you got In-N-Out, you got Buc-ee's, and you got all those places where people could threaten to go work.
But overall, when you're looking to hire somebody, that first step, I mean, I would guess is what? That interview, then they do the physical fitness test, and
so the very first thing they do, once the if I get this process right, I think that there's just kind of like an informal driver's license / warrants check, just to make sure that, you know.
Well, that's good news right there. Right? You're doing background checks.
So we do just a very, well, and it's not a thorough background. It's just a kind of subsurface level, you know, are you a licensed driver? Do you have warrants? Do you meet the very basic standards? The next step is the obstacle course, and there's a standard. Once you pass that, you have the interview board. And at that point, you know, the board will kind of review applicants. And then within the next few days, the captains will make the decision on who to give a contingent job offer to. Once that contingent job offer is triggered, then they do the deep dive background check. Because you have to give them a contingent job offer before you can do that type of background check. After that's done, they start getting into the training process.
Yes.
And I know we only have less than 2 minutes left. Oh, sure. But are there certain times of the year where you're specifically hiring new personnel?
Yeah, it's all scheduled. We do it once a quarter. I don't have the dates right off the top of my head, but once it's a quarter, we have a new hire class.
Yeah, so, it's every quarter.
So if you don't see it right now, worst case scenario, it's 3 months down the road.
So roughly 4 times a year is when you're bringing on new people.
Yep. Yes.
And so the time to actually apply for a position is during those windows?
Yeah, I would say apply. If you're interested, apply. And we do have some mechanisms in place that we can get you on board even before those classes and get you in the door. So anytime you're interested, go ahead and put the application in.
And of course, you're competing with other law enforcement agencies all across the state.
Well, I mean, we're the number one pick, but yeah, I mean, we technically compete, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The bottom line is that there's a lot of jobs, I guess, in law enforcement open in Middle Tennessee, because everywhere's growing.
Absolutely.
So that's got to make it really tough.
Well, we're always looking for the best, so.
And if somebody is interested, what do you recommend they do today?
So the best thing to do is just get on our website, and there's some links on there to contact a recruiter, and they can just get in touch and answer any questions about anything.
So call and at least get your name out there to let them know you're interested.
Yeah, absolutely. And if it's just a moderate interest, you're not sure, we can even put you in patrol cars, let you do ride-alongs, come tour the building, all sorts of things to answer any kind of questions.
Sounds good. Again, with us this morning from the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office, we've got Captain J.D. Davis and also Lieutenant Michael Rogers. Thank you both for joining us.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.